And welcome back to Fully Equipped, Golf.com's gear-focused podcast, where we take weekly PGA Tour news related to golfers of all skill levels. I'm Tim Briand, Executive Vice President of True Spec Golf, joined by Jonathan Wall, Managing Editor for Equipment for Golf.com, and Andrew Tursky, Senior Editor for Equipment for Golf.com as well. Guys, PGA Tour event this week. What do you think? Excited, right?
Live golf. Live golf 13 weeks later. It actually feels longer than 13 weeks, but that does feel like an eternity without some proper PGA Tour golf.
Exciting stuff with the Charles Schwab Challenge on the docket for this week out at Colonial Dallas Fort Worth. That's in your neck of woods there, Jay Wall. Getting out to the event? Probably not.
No, you know, and this is something that, you know, I guess is not that surprising, but when the tour decided to open up the credentialing process, typically as a credentialed media member, it's as simple for me as, you know, logging onto the media website and just letting them know that I'm going to be there. But with them really trying to cut down on the number of folks on site, they are limiting the number of credentials to one media member per outlet. So, they don't necessarily count the gear writers as essential media. I would beg to differ, but yeah, at least for the first five events of the season, it looks like we're going to be kind of watching things from afar. But thankfully, we've got connections, Tursky and myself, and Tim, you as well. We've got connections within the industry, so we're able to kind of see what's going on. And there is a lot of gear news coming out of Colonial.
They just don't want to credential us, so we're not out there touching everyone's golf clubs.
That's right.
Spreading sicknesses.
That's too,
around.
Man. Yeah.
Yeah.
Had a really interesting.
I don't think we're going to be holding clubs for a while.
Yeah, I can't see that. Right, you guys digging in clubs and or digging in sets and taking pictures. That's the days of those are probably gone.
Yeah, it's not the right time for it right now. At least, hopefully, when things pass, we can get back to normal in hand photos. You know, pretty pictures. But
so interesting conversation right before coming in here to the studio to record. We spent some time with Aaron Badley this morning and was just talking about the state of affairs with tour golf and how the tour is dealing with testing for coronavirus. So players, I guess, are being advised to do the take-home or self-testing at home prior to getting on the plane. Can you imagine what that's like? You get on a plane, show up at the event, and then you find out that you're not going to be allowed to play because you've tested positive. So before they get on the plane, they self-test. Then when they get to the event, it's the full-on, you know, test with the swabs and everything else. But this came up in the conversation. Players leading by six going into Sunday, they're asymptomatic, not showing any, you know, any issues on Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Wake up Sunday morning, they got a fever. Do they prevent them from finishing the tournament?
What a question.
Up
I don't know.
Six,
I mean, I guess you have
to play,
right?
Right? Are they allowed to play the rest of the event, or do they tell them this and sorry, but you're disqualified?
I mean, you can't just move the goalposts and change the rules. So if that's the rule that they're going with, then you can't let them play, right?
Brutal. Imagine if you're somebody that's, you know, fighting and clawing for status and you're leading by six going into Sunday and now you get told you got to sit on the sidelines.
You better knock on wood.
Right?
that really could happen.
You know, it
very well happen.
It's funny you mentioned that because when – I remember I think it was last year – I was talking to, and this was during all the stuff about equipment product testing, and you know Bryson DeChambeau mentioned that it should kind of be like NASCAR, where you test the clubs, you test like the winners' clubs and maybe the runner-ups after the tournament ends. I mean, it's kind of a similar situation to what you're talking about, Tim. Is you know you're kind of in the heat of the battle right there. You know what happens at that point? So. I don't know. That's the first time I've heard somebody bring that hypothetical up. But yeah, knock on wood that we don't get that one.
I know this.
That'll scare you straight.
Colonial.
That'll definitely scare you straight into like going out to dinner or anything. It's like
right?
I'm not going anywhere.
If I'm fighting for status out there and I'm up by a bunch going into Sunday and they tell me that I can't play, I'm fighting.
I'm doing nothing but washing my hands with sanitizer. I'm not even eating food.
Right?
I'm not trusting it from anywhere. No
so,
way.
I might be spending time inside a meat locker to get my temperature down.
Right? So interesting world we live in. But we've got some really cool gear stories leading into this week. A bunch of driver information coming out of the tour this week. Jimmy Walker, we've seen a couple stories already regarding the driver shaft switch. Justin Rose has made a switch as far as the length, his typical build spec. We've got Rory making a driver change as well. Got an interesting mailbag question for the week regarding lie angle and performance, and then a couple of interviews teed up with some tour reps. I know Kenton with the team over at Ping and Jacob with the tour department at Callaway were able to spend some time with Jonathan and Andrew and kind of talk about what the post-coronavirus PGA Tour world looks like as it relates to equipment and equipment reps. So should be a great episode. With that, let's get into our first topic of the week, which is Jimmy Walker's driver shaft change.
First off, I just want to say, as like an old school gearhead, I know I'm like kind of young, quote unquote, but I'm still old school when it comes to equipment.
Right.
And Jimmy Walker throwing this steel shaft in his driver is like the coolest story in the last 6 years. The last time someone played a steel shaft driver 6 years ago, and this is the best story in 6 years.
Yeah.
Hot take, but
Jonathan and I had this conversation in previous pods. Another hot take. I think Tiger would have won more majors if he'd have been playing steel for longer in his driver.
Now that is a hot take.
I think he would have hit more fairways.
That's a piping.
Yeah,
that's
scorching hot.
You're
fresh off the flames.
You're talking about one of the best iron players of all times.
Yep.
And so
no argument here.
If you just give him more opportunities to hit irons from fairways, he's gonna score lower. And you know, I know some of the most amazing shots he's hit over his career were actually recovery shots.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that if he hits more fairways, he actually grabs a few more W's. In that same conversation with Bads, we talked about the shaft that he transitioned to, which was that EI-70. And Bads said, yeah, you know, when I transitioned from an X1 steel shaft in my driver to that EI-70, I hit it much further, but I couldn't hit fairways.
Mm-hmm.
And you actually see something similar with a lot of players that went from steel into graphite, especially those first couple years, is that their dispersion patterns got much broader and much looser.
Are we saying that like steel is a viable option for a certain percentage of people, or is this a one-off?
I think it's a one-off just based upon very unique players. So what's the reason that he did it? I believe
was part of it.
And when we're talking feel, as you guys know, I think Jimmy was one of the last guys to play steel in his driver.
Yeah, he said he went until 2008 before he switched.
Yeah. So this is not, you know, it's 12 years, but still, you know, it's a different feel altogether. I'm sure that it feels more familiar, and it probably feels more stable. And so the stability play, I think, is probably, and the consistency play is probably part of the discussion. I'd be curious to see his launch numbers. Like, what's his ball speeds, his spins, his trajectories? What does this dispersion pattern look like with the steel versus with the previous carbon fiber offering? But really interesting story.
Titleist did report the ball speed and the spin numbers, but remains to be seen.
Tursky and I talked about this. I mean, this is the perfect week to try something like this. I mean, we're talking about one of the last true classic layouts on the PGA Tour schedule. So distance is not going to be something that you're going to really care about. I mean, sure, there are some holes where DJ and Rory are going to be able to cut the corner, but you know, this is a week, I think, where if you're a little bit shorter, it's not going to be that big of a deal. My question to you guys is do you think this ends up being, if he has a halfway decent week, does this become a long-term thing for Jimmy? Or I mean, that's my question. When you play a longer golf course, you know, are you going to be missing those yards off the tee?
Well, I don't think he's just changing for Colonial. I mean, I think he's trying to make a positive impact in his game going forward, right?
Yeah.
Why would he make a change just for this event?
I don't think that he would have tuned it in just for the event. This, you know, layers into other conversations we've had on previous pods during quarantine, which is this has provided a lot of players opportunities to go down rabbit holes they never would ever go down because of the timing. You know, even
it's not actually the off season, like they're in peak form.
They're in peak form, but they get the opportunity to test stuff like it's the off season. And with the wraparound season nowadays, what really is the off season?
Mm-hmm.
When is a good time with the new PGA Tour schedule, the wraparound season? When is a good time to really test new gear?
Yeah, to take 8 weeks and try out steel shafted drivers and three woods. Yeah.
The timing is pretty perfect, though. I mean, you think about it, you get Colonial and you get Hilton Head in back to back weeks.
Very, very.
I don't know if Jimmy's playing next week, but you know, and you're right. Look, he's not just making a driver change. He's also putting the steel shaft in the three wood.
Right.
He's not just doing it for one tournament, but the timing of it and the courses that are on tap, it does seem like it sets up well for a change like this.
Here's my guess. If it doesn't work at Colonial and Hilton Head, we're probably not going to see the steel shafts afterwards. You know what I mean?
It'll get
like
a quick,
those are the perfect courses.
Yeah,
I definitely think
it'll have a really short leash.
It's on a short leash. Now, as we always do on Fully Equipped, we try to relate this to players of every level. Should the everyday golfer be considering steel shafted drivers now? I would say absolutely not.
We'll see. A steel shaft might pop up in my driver.
Yeah, well, I'm supposed to spend time with. Yeah, so Andrew and I are spending tomorrow in a fitting, and maybe I'll have them do some steel shafted demos for you to try.
Let's test it out, seriously.
I've heard the driver
just,
is your
problem. Yeah,
do
some head to head testing.
Yeah, we're doing head to head.
Head to head test it.
Yeah. I'm doing cavity backs versus blades, and we're doing steel shaft versus graphite for sure.
That'd be fun. So that brings us into the second topic for the week, which is a change to the build spec on Rosie's driver. You know, he's going to be gaming a product from TaylorMade this coming week. We've been in collaboration with his team and the folks at TaylorMade, Adrian on their team over there, to try to dial in shaft length. And part of the conversation we just had was these 8 weeks, or really 13 weeks, have provided the first opportunity for people to really explore options. So with JR, I think it was an issue where he just wasn't happy with his driving accuracy and really wanted to dial in and hit more fairways. Looking back at his statistics when he was number one in the world versus now, he felt like one of the areas that really wanted to work on was getting back to hitting more fairways. So the first thing that came to mind was, well, what if we try shorter? So during this offseason, there have been, you know, multiple different shafts. So taking his existing gamer shaft, there were multiple shaft lengths that were built, 43.5, 44, 44.5, 45, and 45.5. His normal build spec is 45.5 inches. And I believe he'll be putting a 44.5 inch driver in play this coming week. Was really happy with the results that he saw as far as accuracy and dispersion pattern, and didn't give up anything as far as distance. So obviously, if you're hitting at the same distance but hitting more fairways, that's kind of checking that box with dispersion pattern. But, you know, I think that we're going to see a lot more of this with tour professionals going to these shorter lengths. We saw it out of Tony Finau last year. We see more guys exploring this option and actually really liking it. You know, obviously the build length on Jimmy Walker's driver is not 45 inches, or it would be way too heavy to play anyways. So, you know, I definitely, when you guys have time to get out to some of the events here, you know, during the restart, I definitely watch for that.
Have they ever done a study on driver shaft lengths, and at what point, when you get to a certain length, does it kind of deviate from being accurate to kind of unwieldy, and, you know, losing that bit of accuracy at the expense of trying to chase distance?
So Ping just finished some awesome research very recently on the relativity to score for length versus accuracy. And this is all stuff that you're going to see coming out very soon. And they evaluated it both at the tour player level and at the everyday player level. And their findings were kind of contrary to what you would think. You would think for the average handicap player out there, the 12, 13, 14, 15 handicap, that hitting it straighter would be more important than hitting it longer for their scorecard. Their research actually dictates the opposite. And it all depends upon how much yardage you can pick up. From what I saw, it looked like the threshold was 12 yards. If you can pick up somebody 12 yards, it will have more positive effect over their score, even if they hit it less accurately, than if you were to pick a driver that they hit the same length, but they hit straighter. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a lot of this stuff is going to come out from the team over at Ping in the next few weeks, I would assume, maybe months as they
finalize. I wonder how they factored in, like, penalty strokes out of bounds,
yeah,
or hazards.
Good call. Or, you know. So I wasn't able to look at, like, some of the formatting of this research.
Yeah.
But at the tour player level, I know that it was, like, definitely want to drill down on some of that research. But to your question there, Jonathan, has anybody done any, like, lab-based research and player research that says that, you know, dispersion patterns tend to do these things with players at certain lengths? I know that there's been some research done. I can definitely, you know, ask around the industry, but You know, the shorter build lengths, I think, are here to stay with most tour players. They feel like they have better face awareness and face control, more consistent strike patterns on the face. And for those guys, you know, most of them are not interested in picking up 15 yards, even though the ping research says they'd probably play better. Most of them are trying to hit more fairways and hit it more consistent. So really interesting story on the driver. And that leads us into another driver story for the week, which is Rory. Jonathan, I know you've got some intel there. What's Rory doing on his driver for the week?
Just a driver episode here for this week's Fully Equipped. Yeah, you know, and it's probably not one where, unless you're really searching Getty and looking closely, that you would notice. But Rory is going to, at least based on photos and the fact that the driver has his big dog head cover on it, it looks like he's going to go from a 10.5 TaylorMade Sim driver to a 9-degree TaylorMade Sim Max, and that's going to be one click lower on the loft sleeve for that Sim Max. So looking like Rory's probably going to a more penetrating ball flight with the Sim Max. Obviously, the Sim Max is the more forgiving of the two, but I don't think Rory's really chasing forgiveness. But yeah, it's always an interesting change when guys, you know, Dustin Johnson's one who will typically change drivers because TaylorMade does have multiple options in their lineup, and they've had it for a while now. He'll change drivers based on, you know, the course conditions, wind. I know he's typically played a particular driver for Kapalua, something that kind of flights it under the wind a bit more. And yeah, just kind of curious to see Rory go to the Sim Max this week. But, you know, I don't really know if there's really much other than that. But the loft to me, Tim, is the one thing that kind of stands out, just going to that lower loft.
Number one, it's a lower static loft, and they've also adjusted it down in loft so that it's almost a 2-degree difference between what he came from and what he's going into here. That's huge. True.
Does the Max fly lower than the regular Sim?
The Max flies higher than the regular Sim.
Right. So
that's part of the reason in the differential in loft. By going with the regular Sim product tends to flight it a little bit flatter, with a little bit lower trajectory if you're comparing the same loft. So when they go to the Sim Max product, which is flighting it a little bit higher than the regular Sim product, going with less loft to get an equivalent window makes sense. Now, that's
so he was maybe
difference.
Not trying to hit a more penetrating ball flight. Maybe he wanted to switch into the Sim Max, and then he adjusted it because he wanted to fit that
product.
Because
he wanted to get down. My guess is that he wanted a slightly flatter window than what he was getting out of Sim.
Mm-hmm.
And when he went into that Sim Max product, it's also going to have a different look as far as aesthetic. Remember, when you adjust down that, you know, almost 3/4 of a degree on that first click, somewhere in that range, you're also opening the face by a 2-to-1 ratio almost. So you decrease the loft by a 0.5 degree, you're opening up the face a degree. You decrease it by 1 degree, you're opening the face almost 2 degrees. So it will present a little differently. I don't know what the weight setting is or was in the Sim product.
Pretty neutral.
Was it? Okay. Because one idea there is that maybe the weight was a little bit more towards the toe, which would encourage, you know, more fade ball flight, which is why he would want the face open on the Sim Max product. But
I don't think that's what he had. I think it was right in the middle, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was pretty much dead center.
The Sim Max product is definitely more forgiving. We saw that in club test, Jonathan. You know, we saw that throughout, you know, all of our player testing we did. We've seen it through the initial run here with these products at TruSpec. You know, so is there a play on forgiveness here? There could be. You know, I think don't rule that out. But there's clearly something, you know, going on here. I'd be very interested to get Keith Barbro's take as far as what the reason is for the change. But it's a pretty big change. Suffice to say that this is not a change that was made in the last 3 days. He's been working on this for a while over quarantine, because this is a pretty radical change. I'll be very curious to see if it stays in the bag. Has Rory always played the adjustable weighting product from TaylorMade? They've had for years now, they've had an adjustable weight product as well as a static weight product. When you're looking at like M3, M4, M5, M6, Rory's mostly played the adjustable weight products for them, hasn't he?
He spent some time with M2 when he won the Tour Championship. He had M2 in the bag. Mm-hmm. So he's, and this isn't the first time I think that he's, I'd have to go back and look. And again, this like 13 week layoff, my brain when it comes to trying to remember what guys were using earlier in the season, but I'm pretty sure that he used the max at one point this year already.
Okay.
So I don't think this is a brand new change for him. But again, the fact that he's going to it right after the lengthy layoff, I'm kind of with you, Tim. I don't think this is something that he just, you know, tried to make a rash decision here and go, oh, let's just throw it in the bag this week. I'm pretty sure he's been working on it at home.
I mean, it could have been, though. He could have played in that TaylorMade driving relief match and been like, I don't like this. I want to switch it.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, that wasn't too long ago.
He could have hit a couple on the range with somebody else's driver and said, wait a minute, I like this better.
So it was a little windy out there.
Yeah, DJ uses the max.
That's
so
right.
Maybe
he was like, I like that. Yeah. I like the way he's in it.
Yeah. Now, the question is are the hybrids still in the bag? Remember that was it, did Rory actually get the hybrid in play? I thought he did.
My prediction four months ago, was that they would play it for like a month and then be out of the bag by the time
the season was kicking. Did it survive quarantine for both DJ and Rory?
I will tell you this, based on a photo that I am looking at right now of Rory's gear from Colonial, it is still in the bag.
Wow. Hybrid still in the bag?
Hybrid still in the bag.
Hybrid, Tursky.
Yeah.
We're going to get you in a hybrid tomorrow.
Listen,
big game improvement.
I like it. I like him going to the hybrid, but it doesn't mean it helps my prediction. You know what I mean? Like, that hurts my case. So I'm torn on that one.
Well, it'll be, you know, I think we're going to see a lot of changes. There'll be a lot other changes that haven't been, you know, really promoted yet, you know, that have come out of this work during quarantine with all these guys. Now the rubber meets the road during an event when it's worth millions. And I think you're going to see a lot of changes initially. And then after about 3 weeks, you're going to see a lot of guys go back to the stuff that's familiar to them.
Yep.
You know the way this works. So.
And by the way, I will not be playing a hybrid. I might not even let you make me try it.
We're definitely trying a hybrid tomorrow, Tursky, for sure. And one that's really big and looks like a fairway wood and super upright, just for you.
Yeah, we'll see.
The PGA Tour is back. And even though the trophy is reserved for the winner, the big cash prizes don't have to be. DraftKings, the daily fantasy game of the PGA Tour, is putting you in the center of the action with a free shot at $1 million top prize with your first deposit. It's easy to play. Just pick six golfers, stay under the salary cap, and submit your lineup before the tournament tees off on Thursday. Then sit back and follow the action. The more red numbers they have on the leaderboard, the closer you'll be to winning some green. Rack up points for pars, birdies, finishing position, and more. Download the DraftKings app now and use the promo code FE to get a free shot at the $1 million top prize with your first deposit. That's promo code FE only at DraftKings. Minimum $5 deposit required. Deposit bonus requires a 25-time playthrough. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. There was a great mailbag question this week. I think this is a perfect time to get into mailbag. Regarding lie angle, Jonathan, what do you got on mailbag?
Yep, Zach Berg shot me an email, and this one is for the professor because I was reading through it and he sent it to Tim, and he goes, man, this is right in my wheelhouse. And Zach wants to know, how do you account for someone whose dynamic lie angle and directional miss are counter to each other? Say someone who delivers the club toe up but also misses left. Would you fit them flatter to correct ball flight or upright to straighten out the dynamic lie?
The answer is neither. So ultimately, I wouldn't go more upright. Now, more upright would improve the quality of the strike, so they would hit the ball more. So what we're talking about is somebody that digs the toe but hits left, or somebody that digs the heel and misses right.
How often do you see those two?
What's that?
I said, how often do you see those two together?
Regularly. Yeah. So when we're talking about lie angle influences where something called face normal points. Face normal is like the sum of all parts, right? So if we look at the loft, the lie, and the angle of the face itself, the leading edge, and we combine all of those things and we take a look at where the center of the face is pointed relative to the target line, that's face normal relative to target line. And it's important to understand, I can have the leading edge of the club perfectly square to the target, but if the toe of the club is digging, face normal is going to point right. And that's the reason that the ball goes to the right when you quote-unquote dig the toe. So what we're talking about here is a player who has toe dig, which would typically cause the ball to go to the right, but they're not missing it right. They're actually missing it to the left.
This is my game, by the way.
So what
toe
that
dig
means,
and it goes left.
So what that means is it means that the leading edge is really closed. Okay. The only way that the ball can start left of the target line for a right-handed player with the toe of the club digging is if the leading edge is also simultaneously closed, not a little bit, but probably significantly. So how do you fix it? In theory, you would go with something that's going to cause less closure in the face, so possibly a slightly heavier swing weight, slightly potentially just a little bit longer length, but you have to be careful of strike point on the face that it would start to move towards the heel. You would go with less offset, potentially a shaft that has a little bit stiffer tip section so you get less lead deflection, so the face angle's less closed. And what's going to happen is when you start to add these features to the club in that are going to cause the face to close less, the leading edge of the club will actually be square to the target line, but with the toe still digging, the ball is going to start going right of the target. So then in that case, you would start to move the club more upright. So that would be like the way that I would fix it for this specific player is I would start off trying to test equipment that gets the club face less closed so that the ball starts more online, even potentially to the right of the target. And then I would address the lie angle issue to try to get the ball back to the left. What's most important? Ball flight. So don't adjust your club more upright just because the toe's digging if you're pulling shots, because you're going to end up pulling shots even more. Now, the quality of the strike may improve, but the directional miss will be exacerbated. So that 5-yard pull will turn into a 10-yard pull if you make it more upright. The only time that I qualify that answer is if the strike or the contact is really poor. If you're getting really, really poor contact from shot to shot and a lot of thin shots and a lot of toe-deep divots that are heavy shots, then you may want to adjust the lie angle just to try to get the strike better. If the leading edge of the club is not flush to the ground at impact, it's going to make it more difficult to hit solid shots. So if you get into a situation where the leading edge is really closed and the toe's really digging, it's going to be tough to hit it in the center of the face because the orientation of that club is, you know, it's so askew at the moment of impact. So always let ball flight guide your decision-making as far as lie angle. Don't change the lie angle just because the sole of the club isn't flat to the ground. Make sure the golf ball is dictating to you. And this goes back to like discussions over the last few years that you see a lot of club fitting content these days. Can you use lie boards? Are lie boards real? Do they work? And you'll see a lot of content that says that lie boards lie. And the reason is because a lie board is only looking at one component of face normal, which is whether the toe is digging or not. It's not also factoring in leading edge face angle or loft. So you have to look at all those three things together combined. And at the end of the day, what do all those three angles contribute to? It contributes to your start direction for your shot. And so use start direction more than anything else to tell you what you need to gauge your decision making off of. If you're hitting balls to the left, you're probably going to need to flatten the club. And if you flatten the club and you start to hit it less consistently solid, then you probably should move it back to where it was and understand that part of your directional miss is being caused by an error at impact, and then use the instructional method to kind of fix it. If you're missing shots to the right and you're digging the toe of the club, make the club more upright. But if you're digging the toe and missing it left or digging the heel and missing it right, you've got a little bit of an issue. Because you don't just have a lie angle issue, but you also have a leading edge issue too. So definitely want to use a launch monitor in this case to get some quantitative metrics about what's going on. So it's not just some, you know, subjective opinion that may not be based on fact. So if you have a toe dig, if you notice that your divots are toe deep, but you miss shots to the left, get on a launch monitor and have somebody look at the difference between leading edge, dynamic lie, and dynamic loft. And then you can start to tune it in. So hopefully that's helpful and not confusing.
I hope he wasn't looking for an easy, straightforward answer.
Yeah, unfortunately, there wasn't one. So
when does the professor ever have an easy, straightforward answer? He,
sometimes.
At least he's thorough. You know,
it's not that's what he, it's not what he's here for.
Yeah, I'm here to try to help. I'm here to try to help the people
and educate.
That's right. So
anyone who's dealt with erectile dysfunction knows how awkward it can be to talk in person. Luckily, there's a simple, convenient solution to get the treatment you need without leaving the couch. Our friends at Roman have spent years building a digital platform that can connect you with a doctor licensed in your state, all from the comfort of your home. Roman makes it convenient to get the treatment you need right from home. Just grab your phone or computer, complete a free online visit, and you'll hear back from a U.S. licensed physician within 24 hours. And if the doctor decides that treatment is right for you, your medication can be shipped right to your door with free 2-day shipping. You also get free unlimited follow-ups with your doctor anytime you have questions or want to adjust your treatment plan. With Roman, there are no commitments and you can cancel anytime. If you're struggling with ED, stay home and go to getroman.com/FE for a free online visit and free 2-day shipping. That's getroman.com/FE for a free online visit and free 2-day shipping.
With that, I think it's time to get into our interviews for the week. You guys had an opportunity to spend time with Kenton from Ping and Jacob Davidson from Team Callaway. Tell our listeners a little bit about these interviews. It's really interesting, post-coronavirus world.
Yeah, you know, this is in post-coronavirus, you know, we're talking all about the players and the new protocols that they have in place. But what about the PGA Tour reps, the guys that work with these players on a weekly basis on their gear, testing new product, building stuff in the trucks? You know, things have changed for them, and Kenton and Jacob provided some great insight into what it was like the first week out at Colonial. First up, let's get to the interview with Kenton.
All right, so I'm on the line with Kenton Oates, Ping Tour rep. He's out on the scene at Colonial. Kenton, the question is, what's going on out there?
Yeah, hey, Andrew, thanks for having us on. It's pretty much normal stuff's going on out here. Guys are getting back to playing golf, which I think that's the number one thing out here, is that PGA Tour golf's going to be back tomorrow, and that's a real positive thing for a lot of reasons. And there's some rules and regulations out here that weren't here before, but just follow those and make it so that we can get golf going again.
Can you kind of describe, like, what a normal week of work looks like and then what this week looked like?
Yeah, so a normal work of week, we got our team out here trying to service our players and guys that play our gear. And if Joaquin Neiman shows up on the range and one of us is you know, sees that, we're going to go on the range and say hi and check in on what's in his bag and ask him if there's anything that we can help him with. In this environment, the same stuff's going on, but we're doing it a lot more via our phones. And if Joaquin Neiman walked on the range this week, we could text him and be like, hey, we're here, and wave a little bit or go, like, behind the range, behind the ropes and try to get their attention. But it's more just via, you know, texting, and they know that we're here, but just less interaction one-on-one with the player.
Is there like a sanitation station or some middle ground that you have to drop clubs and shafts balls and hats off?
I'm not sure the technical term, but that's good enough for me. It's been really great for us this week at Colonial. They've done a great job of being able to stage that room for us. There's a little room where I think they do teaching lessons out of on the left-hand side of the range here at Colonial. So the players go in the front door, they would drop something off, we would pick it up the back door, and we would adjust it, and then we put it back on the same side. It would get sanitized, and then the player or caddy would pick it up on their side. So yes, that is how work is done right now.
Is it weird?
It is weird. And we are, if a player really wanted to, like, I worked with Victor Perez this morning on the driving range because he gave me they kind of have a plus one pass for a swing coach or for an equipment manufacturer. But like the weird things there were, like, we're doing driver testing. I got to stay 6 feet or more away from him, so we're kind of standing back. We got TrackMan on and we're all linked into that, but you know, it's easy for me to want to just go make the adjustments to the driver. Well, in this situation, I just had to like relay instructions to his caddy. Like, hey, put this driver in this setting, and then, or put this shaft in this setting and readjust, and hey, make sure that thing clicks one time so the head doesn't go flying down the range.
Yeah, and for some guys who might not be used to doing that stuff, that's, you know, a little out of their element.
Yeah, and then there's other things, like we saw, like, you know, you see Mackenzie Hughes, and he's right outside of the truck, and you're talking to him, and then he's like, hey, can I have some hats? And you're like, oh, yeah, of course you can have some hats. You got the hats, and you just want to toss them to Mackenzie, but you got to remember to take it to the room. So it's just like stuff you do out of habit, right? Like, and it's that stuff that you just have to, like, take a step back and just make sure that you follow the rules and regulations.
Right, yeah. From your experience, like, how do you think the social distancing is going? Like, do you think this is effective?
I do think it's effective. I think it's as effective as everyone's going to make it be, and I think we're all kind of, you know, all companies right now are kind of on the same team in this social distancing thing. Like, we need everyone to be on the same page during these events and just take a step back and stay away from the players and do what the tour's asking, just so we can keep playing golf and keep doing this, because this is obviously better than not playing golf.
Preach. Absolutely.
Yeah.
How much off-season, not off-season, like, how much were you working with players during this break in terms of making equipment changes or testing?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we did a couple of different avenues. There were a couple weeks. I mean, I feel like my quarantine got longer and longer. there's phases of my quarantine. But there were a couple weeks where our company Ping was actually shut down for a little bit, so that was pretty quiet early on. But then the Arizona government kind of opened things up and allowed us to open our doors. We did work with a few players at the factory and a couple players offsite that kind of live local. So we probably worked with four or five players, like, physically. And then we did some guys would just order wedges or a random driver here and there. The one thing that we did do is we did Zoom calls with, I'll say, 20-plus players throughout our worldwide staff. And we would get a bunch of engineers on the calls and just kind of go through their bag and discuss with the players, like, hey, this is what we play, why do you play it, and then what would you want to see in the future? And so those were all very, very fun and entertaining. We learned a lot about our guys in that environment.
So tour players are like every other person with a job right now, just conducting their business over Zoom meetings.
I definitely felt all those memes and all those skits about those Zoom calls, because they aren't wrong.
That's so funny. That's great. So on site, were guys like experimenting and doing testing, or are they trying to keep it pretty straightforward?
That's another thing that's on a normal day when you're in normal environment, you get a good feel for that, right? Like, you could ask you that question, and I could tell you kind of who was testing on my staff and anyone else's staff, really, because you're out there. You see that when you're out here. But in this environment, because I'm not really on the range unless a player's asked me to be on the range, and we're just a little bit more behind the scenes, there's definitely testing going on. You saw some people go to the range, and so there definitely was, but it's like, I don't have a good idea, like, who or how much, to be honest.
Let's get into some specifics. You know, what players are making big changes? Do you have any interesting tidbits going on right now from the Ping staffers?
We had Scott Harrington was one of the guys that we worked on in the last couple weeks, since he's a Phoenix guy, and he's gonna make a switch to just a slightly different driver configuration. It's still the same head, it's just a slightly different shaft, and then he's gonna put an iron in play, same i210 model, but with kind of an aggressive bounce grind. Just to kind of help the club get in the ground a little bit more and really help his fairway bunker play and shots out of, like, non-fairway lies. Like, he came to us and was like, hey, these irons are awesome out of, you know, fairway lies, but I think I could be a little bit better when the lie's not as good. So we talked to him about why and what was going on and came up with this bounce ground on his I-210s, and they're going to go and play this week for the first time, so that's kind of exciting.
Very exciting. Is there any kind of uniform switch that guys are making for Colonial? I mean, I know it's a different course when it's tee to green. I know some guys are making adjustments to drivers and metal woods and stuff like that. Just curious your experience.
We haven't really had anyone make – the only thing, like, guys are trying to decide – I feel like this is a harder one to decide between that. Are we going to play that high loft and fairway wood, or are we going to play that driving iron? And then, like, I mean, it's been windy these couple days, so I think that's the one decision guys always have to make. And I know that, like, Champ was deciding between his two iron and his five wood or four wood. And I didn't know where that ended up. But I think he'll probably end up with the two iron. I think that'll kind of without those clubs will kind of win out around this golf course, to give you another option off the tee and something to keep it down out of the wind.
Mm-hmm. Has Champ made any other changes?
He did put that two iron. He used to play a graphite shaft in it. He requested one with just his steel part that matched his irons over quarantine. So he's got that. If he plays that two iron, that will be the one that will actually be a new club for him, with a steel shaft in there instead of a graphite shaft.
I gotcha.
I'm sure it knocked off a bunch of distance, so he probably only hit like 295.
Good for him, man. Good for him.
Exactly.
How about life on the road? Just, you know, traveling in between stops. Yeah, How is that different?
It's. I mean, obviously, in Phoenix, you have to wear a mask in the airport at all times, and then you're wearing masks on airplanes, which wearing a mask is slowly becoming a little bit more of a normal feeling, I guess. So both the airports that I experienced were a little bit slower, but restaurants are slowly opening up in Texas here, so it felt, I mean, it's starting to feel like things are starting to come back a little bit, but nothing major on that front, I don't think. Not for my, well, I mean, I'm literally one airplane ride into this and two nights in a hotel, so.
I gotcha. I wasn't sure how you were going about it.
Yeah, no, same old, we're traveling the same way, it's just obviously we're just following all the rules and regulations that are in front of us to do that, but they seem to be not that pressing at this time.
Okay. Sweet. Who's your pick to win? Put you right on the spot. How about that?
Right on the spot. I mean, I'm obviously picking it. I'm going mass. I'm going to go with the Homer pick here. I'm picking it from Blair. I'm going to say Louis.
Okay. Louis Oosthuizen. I like it.
Louis Oosthuizen. Got an all-around game. He's got he likes the golf course. Can fly his ball. Yep.
So that's half the battle right there. Now you just got to go make some putts, and you got it.
Yep. I probably just cursed Louis. So if he's ever did listen to this, that's never happened.
Well, let's hope he doesn't listen. I guess I don't know.
Yeah.
All right, Ken. Be safe out there. Thank you for the time. Thank you for the on-scene reporting. Yep. We appreciate it.
My pleasure, Andrew. Thank you, man, and hope to see you out here soon sometime as well.
All right. I hope to be there.
Bye. And many thanks to Kent Notes from the tour department over at Ping. And with that, let's get to part two of our interview for this week. Jacob Davidson from the tour department at Callaway.
Was this your first week traveling since the tour shut down, or had you been anywhere else?
Yeah. So, you know, we shut it down. We left the Players Championship on that Thursday morning, and we have not traveled since then. So first week back on the road. We're excited to be here, and it's been a long time coming. We've missed traveling and being out here and seeing everyone.
Kind of take me back to that week at Sawgrass. What was it kind of like? What were you hearing? Any sort of rumblings going on? Just kind of as the tour was getting ready to shut down.
Sure. So, I mean, it kind of started on Monday, and obviously the rumor mill was alive and well, and just kind of started trending on Tuesday and then Wednesday. And I think Wednesday afternoon for us, you know, Tim Reed, our VP of Global Sports Marketing, was at the Players. And so, you know, we started to realize internally at that point, working with some of the team back in Carlsbad, that, you know, we kind of felt like things were – going to shut down or move towards that direction, because obviously safety is our first priority. So, you know, that Wednesday afternoon, I think, was when the real discussion started. And then at that point, you know, we didn't know if the players was going to finish or not, or if it was going to either start. And then, you know, it did start, and then they canceled it. So, you know, from there, we were just trying to plan accordingly. And for us, you know, we kind of said, hey, you know, where can we, you know, stage our tour truck to where if Carlsbad shuts down with the mandate in California, maybe in a state like Florida, you know, that may not have really the virus in a hot market like that. So we sent it down to West Palm and had it staged down there. That way, when Carlsbad closed down, you know, we could still provide service to our guys if we needed to.
How much did you miss being on the road? I know that, you know, the tour is essentially a traveling circus. You know, you show up in one you know, city 1 week, and you're on to the next. Especially for you, for you know, for the tour reps who are there the early part of the week. You know, sometimes I would say, you know, talking to some guys, that you kind of take it for granted just because it is a little bit of that traveling circus. How much did you miss just being on the road?
Yeah, it is. It was funny, you know, Jonathan. You know, we travel with these guys from Sunday to Wednesday, and the guys we work with, I mean, you know, we're a little bit more than just colleagues. We're family, because we spend so much time, you know, on the truck together, eating dinner together, living life together. So, you know, we did a lot of Zoom calls and stuff like that, but it's great to finally, you know, when we got off the airplane and, you know, met each other at the airport this Sunday afternoon, it was fun to get back in and get to that routine. And, you know, we're enjoying it. And I think we got spoiled. We've been sleeping at home in our beds for so long, you know, getting out here in the courtyard's been a little bit of a adjustment, you know, getting used to the pillows and everything.
Speaking of adjustments, what was the adjustment like just trying to get to Fort Worth for the tournament? What's it like for those that haven't traveled to make the flight now that we're in the COVID era?
Sure. It was, you know, the airport's a little less crowded. You know, we flew American Airlines for a couple of us, which is a different routine. We're Delta guys, and unfortunately, you know, we couldn't get the right flight, so we had to switch airlines. And so, you know, wearing masks, those types of things. But all in all, it was, you know, pretty easy. We felt comfortable. You know, everything seemed really clean. But, you know, I think that, you know, the airlines and the whole travel industry and hotels, they've taken a lot of steps to make sure that you felt comfortable, and I think we all have.
So obviously travel, just getting to the tournament site has changed. But the big question that I want to ask you is how much has your day-to-day job changed? You know, I know that reps are used to flying in on, you know, Saturday or Sunday and showing up early Monday morning. What was it like on Monday when you showed up to the tour event? Can you kind of walk me through what that new process is like for you?
Sure. So we actually, Jonathan, we sent out a text last week and told guys, hey, you know, we know it's going to be a busy week. We got 28 staffers in the field this week. You know, servicing you is going to be different. It's going to be a little bit harder. It's going to take a little more time. So, you know, hey, be proactive. Let us know what you need done. And so we kind of had a running list coming into Sunday, you know, with about 31 action items before the event started of things that we needed to do. Or players to see or visit or service. And so, you know, we actually took some flights out early on Sunday morning, got in. We spent, we had four guys on the truck here. We spent about 6 hours on Sunday getting everything ready, you know, stocking the truck back up with all the stuff that we shipped in. And then, you know, come Monday morning, you know, they checked your temperature when you came in through the gates. And, you know, we're only allowing Callaway employees on our tour truck this week. So no outside agents or caddies or players or anything like that. And then really, you know, the tour has kind of established what they call the sanitation station. That, you know, when we build a club, we take it to them, they sanitize, and it gives to the players. So that part has been a little bit challenging as far as if a player gets a club on the driving range, he hits it, you know, maybe he needs a little bit of tweaking to that golf club, you know, take some loft off or, you know, change the weighting around. It has to go back to that sanitation station. And then back on the truck, we work on it, we sanitize it, it goes back to the sanitation station and then back to the player. So that part has been challenging, but, you know, the players have been patient with us, and, you know, it seems to be working okay.
So you mentioned just having to kind of have an intermediary now who's cleaning the golf clubs. How does that change the whole testing process? Are refs allowed on the range to kind of, because you guys are the eyes and the ears for the tour players. Mm-hmm. You know, you work on these clubs and you know the ins and the outs. So something that they might say might require a tweak for a golf club. Is that just kind of extending the process a little bit when it comes to testing product?
It is. The tour is allowing us to go on the range, so each player has one guest badge that they can use for their swing instructor or gotcha. For an equipment OEM rep. And so, you know, we just have to be invited out there with them. But the difficult thing, Jonathan, is, you know, if we see something in a driver, you know, we need to change the settings, maybe click it around a little bit, add some loft, take some off, move the weights around. You know, we actually can't pull out the wrench out of our pocket and do it. So, you know, we got to stay 6 feet back and just kind of advise the player on how to do his own adjustments on the club. So that part is has been fun to, you know, kind of just coach them from afar, maybe. So we got a good time with it. But, again, the players have been awesome. They get it. They understand. And I think everyone is just happy to be back out here.
Would you say that's probably the biggest hurdle or adjustment that you've had to kind of make to your day-to-day routine, just the way that you are kind of working with tour players and testing product?
No doubt. I would say that really everything out here is business as normal, except for the fact that, you know, those types of things, it just makes everything is taking a little bit longer. But, you know, it's been good. We've done a ton of loft and lie work and changing some grips and, you know, all that. Routine maintenance that, you know, new wedges for guys, just because we haven't seen them in, you know, 3 months. And so those types of things, just, you know, servicing them. But everyone out here seems, you know, ready to go. There hasn't been a ton of new club work. We've done some prototype testing with some stuff that, you know, over the last couple of months we've collaborated with R&D, kind of taking the feedback from, you know, the initial Maverick launch and worked with, you know, Alan Hocknell and the Metalwoods team and made some changes through COVID-19. And we really dug in deep to that. And so we were fortunate enough to have some stuff out here that we could do some testing with this week to get some feedback for next year's line. So I would say that that's been a good experience for us and a positive that came through, you know, this pandemic over the last couple months.
You know, you mentioned just, you know, a little bit of work this week. But did you work on any projects for players? I know a lot of guys shut it down. Did you do any work for them while you were at home? Any kind of like side projects that you were just holding off on until you had a quiet minute?
Yeah, you know, we did. We sent out, you know, a lot of product throughout, you know, the downturn here, especially putters, et cetera. So, you know, we were staying communicating with these guys weekly. But most of the guys, believe it or not, I think really, especially for that first 8 to 9 weeks, took a lot of time off, really rested, spent some time with their family, let their body heal back up. And then the last, you know, 2 or 3 weeks, it's picked back up and guys have started, you know, trying to make sure their game and their bags are ready to go for this week.
And just last question for you is, you know, it's first week out. So you're constantly trying to kind of tweak your processes and the way you guys do things. Is there anything that you learned from week one that you've said, look, we're going to need to change this kind of going forward for at least the next, you know, 3 or 4 weeks until there's a bit more clarity and the tour I know is going to start allowing fans. So hopefully that opened things up a bit.
You know, from our end, Jonathan, I think our process is pretty good. We feel pretty comfortable with it. We're pretty efficient. The biggest change I think for the tour guys is just learning that process, being proactive, communicating, letting them know, you know, when they're going to arrive, when they want help, you know, because they're just used to kind of just seeing us be on the range, and when they need something, they can call us over there and you know, we're able to help them. So I think that's going to be the biggest change for them is, you know, some of these guys have, you know, done that type of routine for, you know, their whole career on tour. And so, you know, that's just, they're not thinking about it. It's, you know, they're just showing up and then they realize it. So I think more so on their side, getting used to this new routine is going to be more beneficial for us. But, you know, we spent countless hours as a team, you know, working to get our process down so that we could service these guys efficiently. And I think we got a good model down, hopefully that leads the charge to helping these guys and our staffers.
Awesome. Jacob, thanks for the time.
Absolutely, Jonathan. Good to see you, buddy.
And thank you to Jacob for the interview. And that's the end of the episode. But before we leave, we got some issues to address. Last week, we gave away a driver. We posted on Fully Equipped Golf Instagram that we were giving away a Callaway Epic Flash Sub-Zero driver. And we will now be picking live on air the winner.
Drum roll, please.
Can I get a drum roll?
Let's do it.
So there were over 400 entries.
Oh, wow.
Thank you to everyone who followed, entered. This is a very exciting moment. It's obviously fun for us to give something away to the people.
That's right.
A lot of people need a new driver.
So I'm about to literally select someone at random right now. I'm scrolling through. And Snap Hook 1984.
Nice.
On Instagram at Snap Hook 1984. I love
it. He's going to get a wide open upright driver. I'm feeling it.
Yeah, Who needs a driver more than someone that snap hooks it?
We definitely need to send that out preset for anti snap settings.
Yeah, we're putting that on full fade for you, bud.
If you want, we can throw some hot melt in there on the toe for you, Mr. Snap Hook.
All right, so congratulations to Mr. Hook.
Amazing.
And that was episode 46
in the can. That's a wrap.
Thank you to everyone for listening. We'll see you next week.